From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, did Texas accidentally legalize same-day voter registration?
I don't think same-day registration in Texas is impossible. It's just a matter of really looking at how it could be done and approaching it beyond just language and amendment in a bill.
And the redistricting map will soon be heading to court.
And whatever their goals in terms of partisanship, you cannot discriminate intentionally on the basis of race. And that is what they did. That was what drove the drawing of the map lines here. And it is improper and it is unconstitutional.
Support for this podcast of Texas Matters comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company. By investing in local communities and rewarding policyholders for prioritizing safety, they are building a more resilient Texas. More at texasmutual.com/texansgetit. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. On August 25th, Governor Greg Abbott sent a message to the Texas legislature expanding the second special session to include legislation to, quote, prohibit same-day voter registration in Texas. Well, that took many by surprise because it wasn't widely known that somehow same-day voter registration was legalized in the state. Texas has one of the most restrictive voter registration processes in the nation. For example, there is no online voter registration here. It turns out that in the regular legislative session, Texas passed Senate Bill 2217 that allowed voters who changed their address within the same county on Election Day to immediately be able to cast a ballot for their new precinct or district. The provision became law with bipartisan support and was slated to take effect on September 1st. Now, Governor Abbott's new proposal would halt the rollout of SB 2217's provision, restoring the rule that allows address updates at the polls only after a 30-day waiting period. Supporters argue that this safeguard ensures that voter registration remains secure and accurate. Critics, however, view it as a rollback of voter flexibility, especially for mobile populations such as students and people who are low income. And this wrinkle in election law is casting a light on the state's antiquated, rickety, and unnecessary burdensome voter registration process, which in a way serves as a form of voter suppression. I spoke with Natalia Contreras about this and Abbott's odd addition to the special session call. Contreras covers election administration and voting access for VoteBeat in partnership with the Texas Tribune.
Yeah, actually, whenever we saw that press release, we thought the same thing. This already is not something that is allowed in Texas. And so, you know, a couple of weeks ago, the Texas Secretary of State held its annual training for election officials in Round Rock. And all of the election officials are gathered there and they go over election laws and what election officials need to know and the changes that are coming to election law every year. And they mentioned this change to election officials. And it was one of those things that everybody kind of had questions about because
I'm sure their jaws hit the floor when they heard this.
And so, yeah, some of them had questions because logistically, Texas is not set up for this, right? We don't have online voter registration and our system is just not set up to handle right now same-day voter registration. Many other states do it. It's not like we couldn't do it, right? But it's not something that can be done by just changing language in a law and then, you know, expecting everybody to be able to handle this when the status quo has been so different for so long.
So Texas is still kind of in the analog age when it comes to voter registration.
It is. I would agree with that. I mean, the fact that we still have, I mean, Texas is huge. We have millions of people here. People are moving here constantly every day. And people are shocked whenever they realize, oh, you can't just register online. You have to do it and fill out this paper form and then wait several days to figure out if you're in the system or not. And then sometimes that's not even super reliable either. Yeah, that is, you know, we are still kind of in the early stages of where we could be.
And the deadline to register to vote is the maximum allowed time before an election.
Right, 30 days before an election.
That's seen also as a barrier to participation in the election because people frequently don't even hear about the election or the issues of the candidates until the election is right there.
Right. People are not thinking about elections. I mean, I'm thinking about elections constantly, but this is like what I do. But yes, most people aren't, right? Until they figure out, oh, there's, you know, an election happening because they're seeing the signs or because, you know, there's announcements about early voting. But yeah, just people are not thinking about it. And it's something that you could just miss. That's right.
So how did we end up with this accidental, I don't know if that's the word to use or not, approval of same-day voter registration? There was a Senate bill, 2217. Is that what happened?
Yeah, I also wouldn't call it accidental because of how our legislature works, right? So Senate bill 2217, you know, was supposed to be a bill that would make reports, you know, election reports, election rosters, reconciliation reports that you need after an election to be consistent across the state. This change to make a voter's address change effective immediately was brought in on the House floor, like at the last stage of this bill. And so the way it works right now is bills, you know, have to be heard in committee. So this bill was heard in the House Elections Committee, had already been heard in the Senate, had already been approved in the Senate, made it to the House, made it to the House Elections Committee, and made it out of committee without this amendment. This amendment about making a voter's change of address effective immediately was added on the floor, on the House floor, when they were voting on whether to approve this bill or not. And those amendments, you know, that sometimes lawmakers will try to amend a bill. You'll see like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 amendments. They'll vote on the amendments, right? Like they'll vote against amendments. They'll approve them. This seemed like an amendment that was kind of like a deal between the Democrats and the Republicans because it passed with a lot of support from both parties.
But let me add this, though, this amendment was introduced by Representative Matt Shaheen. He's a Republican of North Texas. He chairs the House Committee on Elections. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he this is his bailiwick. He knows what's going on here. This was not something that was snuck in by some crafty Democrat.
No, it wasn't. And the reason I say it was probably a compromise between both of the parties is because we also do have Democrats in that committee. And actually, Representative Busey from Austin is a Democrat, and he is the vice chair of that committee. And like I said, there was really no opposition to his amendment. So it seemed to me, you know, like a compromise here. And sometimes those do happen on the House floor. But the reason I'm not calling this an accident is because this happens a lot. It's allowed by the legislature. The problem with this is what we're seeing now. What we're seeing is that there was no opportunity for the public or for election officials to comment on this, right? To tell the legislature, hey, this may not be something that we can pull off right now. And then that's what we're seeing now. Now we're seeing, you know, the governor calling for this extended second special session and you know, to see a policy kind of reverse what was done on the floor.
not an accident, but maybe a mistake. I mean, he's trying to do a correction, so there had to be something wrong, right?
I mean, I'm trying to be careful to call it to assume, because I haven't, you know, directly asked Representative Shaheen or anyone else what happened here. But, you know, what I think could be also done, right? Like, I don't think same-day registration in Texas is impossible. Like I was saying earlier, it's just a matter of really looking at how it could be done and approaching it beyond just language and amendment in a bill that's moving forward. It's just not as easy with election administration and with the election process that we have here in Texas to do it this way.
It would take a overhaul of the way that we do voter registrations, bringing it into the 20th century before we could have something like this.
And, you know, maybe not an extreme overhaul, but just to take a minute to consider how we do things, right? There are counties that still use, you know, they're not using e-poll books, like those machines that check you in. You know, you provide your ID and they scan them with an iPad, if you're familiar with that. Not all counties have that. Some counties are very small, have very few resources. Those e-poll books are connected in a way that can verify whether you already showed up at another polling location and you already tried to vote, right? It's a security measure. But not all counties have that. So if we wanted to implement same-day voter registration, we have to think about that aspect of it too. We also have to think about, you know, the checks and balances there. Like, are we, other states that do this, you know, require folks to have that change already in their ID, that change of address, or provide proof, right? Like a bank statement, a check, or, you know, a bill or something that has your address on there. There's different things. So, like I was saying, just that amendment on itself like that wasn't going to just do everything that's required to ensure that logistically this works.
Well, simultaneously, we're seeing some counties in Texas getting rid of machine voting. President Trump has called for the end of voting machines and hand counting. They want to do hand counting. So we're actually moving in the other direction.
Yeah, I mean, we saw at least so far, one county has hand counted, right? They've done it in a way where, you know, voters came into the polling place, they hand marked their ballot, and then it was hand counted by a group of people. There are still a lot of counties in Texas that don't use the touch screens that you're referring to, right? Like those ballot marking devices. And that's fine, but still, those ballots are tabulated by machines and they're scanned by machines. And then they are hand counted afterwards to check the accuracy. And that's required by state law to check the accuracy of the machine count. But yeah, there's been in the past few years this movement, right, to get away from all of that. I would be interested to see if that actually does happen. I mean, it's just it's hard to think about it actually being done in a place so big as our state, with so many people and so many voters, especially in a time when we are wanting fast results. We are really scrutinizing this process so much, right? Hand counting the results, right? Having a group of people hand counting them, the way that our law is written right now in Texas doesn't provide for any transparency to that process. And so it would also be a complete overhaul of our process if we were actually gonna go through with all of that. And I would be very, 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 very surprised if we actually move forward with that.
Just looking at this episode, they passed that Senate bill, 2217, covers a variety of election-related processes, trying to uniform and streamline this from county to county. And then this got in the same day voter registration. But it does seem to illustrate that Texas has a clunky, Byzantine, old style way of doing things. It's not modern.
It's not. And, you know, I am also wanting to see, you know, in the next week or so, whether lawmakers will try to push for just prohibiting same day registration altogether. I don't know if that will happen. I haven't heard anything about that, but that's one thing that I was thinking about too, whenever the first announcement from the governor came out with this, right? This change, you know, would have been for voters that are already registered.
Also, let me clarify that point. So the change was to help people who had a change of address living within the same county, and that they were able to update that address on the same day that they vote.
That's right. So right now, the way it works is that if you show up to the polls during early voting, and you have moved within the county, you fill out a statement of residence form and you update. It's basically an update to your voter registration if you didn't do it ahead, you know, before the election.
But I want to just bring out the point that people who move a lot and might need this type of additional help in voting tend to be people who are low income. They tend to move apartment to apartment quite a bit, and also college
students
college students.
Mm-hmm.
And so
yeah, that's right.
This is something that would have benefited those voters, but now they don't have that.
Right. I mean, and like I said, you would fill out that statement of residence form, but you would have still voted with the ballot of your old address, if that makes sense. What this does is you are able to do that same thing, update your address, but you get a ballot with your new address. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's why the first thing they ask you when you go to vote and you hand over your ID, they ask you, is this mm-hmm. still your address?
Yes, that's right. So that you get the correct ballot. And if that's not your address, then they make you sign that form, fill out that form with your new information. And then all of that gets updated for the next election. Say that there's a runoff election, then you would go into the polls and your information would be already updated for that upcoming election. This whole process takes 30 days because election officials have to make sure that your address is, you know, where is it located? What ballot style do they give you? Also, they send you an updated voter registration card to also make sure that that is the correct address, right? That it's not undeliverable. So there's all of these like steps that election officials have to take. And that's why there's that long process of 30 days instead of it happening like immediately.
Natalia Contreras covers election administration and voting access for VoteBeat in partnership with the Texas Tribune. That controversial new redistricting congressional map has been passed in the Texas House and Senate, and Governor Abbott has pledged to sign it. The map is gerrymandered to provide 5 additional seats to Republicans. The Texas NAACP says the map is illegal because it is racially gerrymandered. They're asking the courts to block the map so it cannot be used in the 2026 midterm election. The Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law is representing the NAACP in this challenge. Robert Weiner is the director of the Voting Rights Project at the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law.
We originally challenged the 2021 redistricting on the grounds that the districts drawn intentionally discriminated against people of color. And we challenged 15 districts, and we said that the districts were drawn to disadvantage people of color and that the disadvantages could not be explained statistically by partisan objectives. That was the 2021 map. The legislature has made it worse. They've now adopted new maps that increase the discrimination against people of color, in particular in a number of districts that were targeted in a letter from the Department of Justice.
Now, Governor Abbott called the redistricting special session, saying that he had gotten a letter from the Department of Justice ordering him, or saying that there were districts in the 2020 map that were unconstitutional. Abbott cited that DOJ notice as the legal basis or constitutional interest for calling that special session to redraw those districts mid-decade. They went even further with that, but his argument was that they were illegal because they were still protecting voting rights of the minorities.
Yeah, the DOJ letter was difficult to defend. In fact, it's impossible to defend as a legal matter. The DOJ wrote a letter that said that four majority-minority districts, primarily Dallas and Houston, were racially gerrymandered. And the reason the Justice Department said that was a decision by the Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit in 2024 that said you can't win a case under the Voting Rights Act by combining more than one minority group in order to get a majority in a district. And so from that decision, which said you can't win a voting rights case, the Justice Department sends this letter that says, oh, these so-called coalition districts are unconstitutional. Well, the court not only didn't say anything about the districts being unconstitutional or in any way improper, it specifically sent the case back down to the district court to consider the constitutional claims of the plaintiffs in that case. It is a complete and total mischaracterization of the decision. And what's more, you know, we did a trial on the 2020 plan in May and June of this year, and Texas legislators testified under oath that they did not consider race in their plans. And yet the governor cites this letter accusing the state of racial gerrymandering as the basis for putting this on the agenda for the special session. Then the legislature picks it up and carries it forward to effectuate this new additionally discriminatory plan.
So how important is it that the entire motivator for the redistricting plan in Texas, in order to get five additional Republican congressional seats, is based upon this letter, which, and Governor Abbott's argument, and when he called the special session, but as we move forward, that really wasn't what was talked about. We have President Trump telling reporters he wants five additional seats, he deserves five additional seats, but he doesn't talk about issues of race and gerrymandering and all those things and discrimination. He just says he wants them because he needs them to maintain control over Congress. And as they move forward with the arguments in the House about this whole thing, they continue to talk about political power and that they just want to increase Republican power and not about the issues that were raised in the initial letter, which seemed to be what triggered the whole thing.
Well, whatever the partisan goals, what they have done is targeted particular districts that were majority-minority districts, districts that had a majority of minority voters, and they targeted those districts based on their racial composition. And whatever their motives, their goals in terms of partisanship, you cannot discriminate intentionally on the basis of race. And that is what they did. That was what drove the drawing of the map lines here. And it is improper and it is unconstitutional.
Republicans who support the redistricting in Texas are saying that they are only trying to increase Republican power. And that's what they're looking at. They're not looking at racial issues But if these things happen to intersect, well, then that's not what they were after. That's just too bad.
Well, they didn't just happen to intersect. The specific target was districts that had a majority of minority voters, and they were targeted and modified based on their racial composition. And that is a violation of the Constitution.
You're seeking an injunction to prevent this map from going into effect. And I guess you'd have to show that there would be some level of harm if it were to go into effect. What kind of harm would there be?
Well, when there is racial discrimination that results in the loss of opportunity for minorities in a particular, the loss of equal opportunity for minorities, that is harm. Racial discrimination is harm. Plans that have a predominantly racial focus is harm. And our clients suffered harm here.
Texas has a long history of racial discrimination in voting and in running elections. Does that enter into that? Is that important context?
Yes, that is important context. The Supreme Court has set out a number of factors that you look at as direct and circumstantial evidence of a racial, intentional racial discrimination. Well, here we have direct evidence, but there's also circumstantial evidence. The history is a part of that. And the significant departure from normal procedures here in the way the session was run, the lack of notice, the exclusion of minority participants, just the fact of it being a mid-decade redistricting is all evidence that points towards this being not your ordinary event, but a racially discriminatory event.
During the quorum bust from the Texas Democratic lawmakers, they left the state of Texas to prevent the map from being voted on in the first special session. We saw Governor Abbott on Fox News saying things like, if those Democrats don't come back, he will increase the number of districts the Republicans will be able to win in the midterm elections. When he was talking like that, he wasn't referring to the fact that the original map that he was redistricting, that there was something wrong with it. He was just talking about political brute force. Doesn't that reveal that the legal rationale for calling the special session and doing the redistricting, that that was a sham?
He specifically relied on a racial justification for putting redistricting on the agenda, and he said that he wanted to do away with so-called coalition districts, which are districts that have a majority of minority voters. And the Supreme Court has said that when you target districts because of their racial composition, that is improper, that is discriminatory. That's what he said, and he can't really run away from that, and nor can the legislature.
Robert Weiner is the director of the Voting Rights Project at the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. Email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. You can find us wherever you download cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.